From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The UN Security Council is to vote Monday on a draft resolution affirming any decision to change the status of Jerusalem has no legal effect. The Egypt-drafted document does not mention President Donald Trump's decision to recognize the city as Israel's capital. In the Arab and Muslim world, protests over the U.S. decision, including two Turkish cities, Ankara and Diyarbakir. There were also protests in Pakistan, Indonesia, and the Palestinian territories. In Paris, Habir Hamad says she's angered over the U.S. decision, saying it forgets Palestinians and their rights. Randolph-Macon College history professor Michael Fishback said the U.S. decision reversed decades of international understanding about Jerusalem, even with the Israeli capture of all the city in 1967.
That is to say, East Jerusalem, the old city and its suburbs, are considered by the U.N. and the international community to be occupied territories, and therefore no change in that status, that sense of being occupied, can be tolerated by the global community on the part of anybody. And that's really what's being expressed here. And the Trump administration's decision has completely upended that.
Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has vowed his government will open an embassy in East Jerusalem to recognize it as the capital of Palestine. Eastern Libyan commander Khalifa Haftar Sunday said the UN-backed government is obsolete with the expiration of a two-year mandate and suggested he may compete in presidential and parliamentary elections the UN is trying to arrange next year. Speaking in Benghazi, Haftar also appeared to dismiss UN efforts to bridge differences between the UN-backed unity government in Tripoli and the Eastern administration in Tobruk. This is VOA News. In Latin America, the Election Tribunal of Honduras ruled that incumbent President Juan Orlando Hernandez prevailed in a bitterly contested election that brought sometimes violent protests to the streets. Mr. Hernandez, a center-right ally of the U.S., won a narrow 1.5% victory over challenger Salvador Nasralla, who was charged fraud. Rice University Latin American analyst Mark Jones said Nasralla is reportedly seeking U.S. help.
Certainly, Salvador Nasralla, his opponent, can travel to Washington and complain about fraud. But the reality also is that President Hernandez has been a strong ally of the United States, whereas Salvador Nasralla is linked to Mel Zelaya, who is widely seen as being antagonistic to U.S. interests in the region.
Meanwhile, in Chile, conservative Sebastian Piñera won the presidency Sunday with a nearly 10-point lead over center-right opponent Alejandro Gutiérrez. He said he hopes to build a good future for all his countrymen. Mr. Piñera has vowed to cut taxes, double growth, and eliminate poverty. The outcome was seen by some as a referendum on the tenure of outgoing President Michelle Bachelet. President Donald Trump is expected to deliver a speech on national security Monday. Reuters quotes two senior U.S. officials as saying Mr. Trump will make clear China is a competitor, especially in the area of trade. Steve Mnuchin, U.S. Treasury Secretary, appearing on Fox News Sunday, said the U.S. is in economic competition with Beijing.
This isn't about trade wars. This is about reciprocal fair trade. And if we have to protect American workers and put on tariffs or other things where they don't have fair trade with us, the president will do that.
Mnuchin said the president believes fair trade does not exist with China, including a big trade deficit. He said the U.S. wants a more balanced and fair trade relationship. At least four people were killed in Nigeria Sunday when gunmen opened fire on a military-escorted U.N. World Food Program convoy carrying civilians and food aid near Gamboro along the Cameroon border. The gunmen are believed to have been members of the Boko Haram Sunni insurgency. In the Ukrainian capital Kiev Sunday, police clashed with supporters of former provincial governor and former Georgian president Mikhail Saakashvili, who was released from a brief detention last week after being accused of trying to orchestrate a coup. He's accused President Poroshenko of corruption, accusations the Ukrainian leader denies. Russian President Vladimir Putin thanked President Donald Trump Sunday at a telephone call after U.S. intelligence provided information to Russia that prevented a potentially deadly bomb attack in St. Petersburg. The White House said the planned attack had the potential of killing a large number of people. Russian law enforcement was able to arrest suspects before their plans could be carried out. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, December 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Supporters of South Africa's ruling ANC party are awaiting results of the party's leadership election.
The news coming out is that the results for those top positions will only be ready and announced between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. our time.
Shadrach Guto is a professor emeritus of the University of South Africa. Burundians react to their government's decision, asking them for contribution to fund the 2020 election. And Sierra Leone's government has again been sued in the ECOWAS Court of Justice, this time for alleged violation of Ebola survivors' rights.
In as much as we haven't received any official notification yet from ECOWAS, I'm sure the government will be vindicated.
Abdoulaye Berete is a spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. A UN official comments on the path to establishing a hybrid court for South Sudan, and a Hollywood actor originally from West Africa reveals a long-held secret. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Supporters of South Africa's ruling African National Congress, ANC party, are this morning awaiting results of the party's leadership election to replace President Jacob Zuma. The two candidates are South African Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa and Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, former chair of the African Union Commission and former wife of President Jacob Zuma. Voting, which should have started on Sunday, began early Monday morning. The vote at the party's national conference in Johannesburg followed a bitter dispute over a decision to exclude almost a tenth of the original 5,240 delegates who the party ruled weren't properly accredited. Shadrach Guto is professor emeritus of the University of South Africa. He says results are expected sometime this morning, South African time.
The conference was supposed to start yesterday in the morning at 8. It did not start until after 3 p.m. And the main problem then was that there were objections by some provinces and branch delegates that some of them were not properly elected by their branches or provinces for them to attend. So the question of legitimacy of those who came were questioned. But once those disputes were settled, they started, nominations were being given. And it is only after the nominations that voting started at night. And the news coming out is that the results for those top positions will only be ready and announced between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. our time.
Who benefits from the editing of these delegates? If they were to vote according to their branches, who would benefit? Mr. Ramaphosa, Madame Dlamini Zuma. And who benefits now with the new process?
What is clear here is that for any of them to win, they will have to garner the vote of 2,389 out of the total of 4,776 who are attending legitimately. We still don't know. The nominations which took place already before they go to the elections, Cyril Ramaphosa was leading. He got 1,469, and Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma got 1,094.
Professor Guto, if this were an election in another African country, we would be talking about whether the voters are going to be voting on tribal lines or affiliation. In the South African situation, I'm assuming probably people are not voting on tribal lines, or are they voting according to provinces? Are they a vote bind? What we say, and this happens a lot, say Zambia and other countries, horse trading. What do you think is most likely to influence some people in casting their votes?
All of the above have been claimed that some of the delegates were being paid and or were receiving money. nothing has been verified which ones. So of course, there will be maybe some petitions after that. Then, of course, we do have all the 9 provinces. Obviously, they are ethnic groups, and there's no province with only one ethnic group. It is a mixture, but there are majorities within those provinces. So one cannot say that tribalism is not playing a role. Money is not playing a role.
Shadrack Gutto is the Professor Emeritus of the University of South Africa. You're speaking with me from Pretoria, South Africa. Sierra Leone's government has again been sued in the ECOWAS Court of Justice, this time for alleged violation of Ebola survivors' rights. According to the World Health Organization, most of the people affected by the Ebola epidemic that struck West Africa between 2014 and 2016 were Sierra Leoneans. The country lost a total of 3,956 lives. Now, 2 survivors have filed a lawsuit in the ECOWAS Court of Justice, accusing the government of violating the rights of its citizens to life and health by allegedly mismanaging the millions of dollars provided by the international community to combat Ebola. The ECOWAS Court of last month ruled that President Ernest Bai Koroma illegally sacked his then Vice President Sam Sumana. Abdullahi Biruti, spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma, says although the government has not been served any legal papers, he's confident the government will be found not guilty.
We have not yet been notified officially, but we are aware about civil society organization that convened a meeting alleging it is on behalf of the Ebola survivors and that the government was complicit in the deaths of the Ebola people because of our response. But one thing, though, has been, in as much as we haven't received any official notification yet from ECOWAS, I'm sure the government will be vindicated because even in the peak of the Ebola response, the government was able to authorize a real-time auditing, which found civil society and some civil servants culpable of interfering with the funds being provided. I think the onus is on them to go and establish that legally. But for us as a government, we will continue to support the survivors. We are working very closely with them.
Did you say that your government conducted an investigation following allegations of mismanagement?
Absolutely. There was a real-time auditing authorized by President Koroma. And as I'm speaking to you now, I can authoritatively say the Anti-Corruption Commission issued a public notice when some civil society organizations tampered with some funds meant for the Ebola response. Not a single politician was named in that report.
Your former vice president, Mr. Sam Sumana, because he also took your government to the ECOWAS court. What I know from that case is that his case was tried, I think, in the Sierra Leone Supreme Court. Did these civil society groups, did they sue your government in the courts of Sierra Leone before going to ECOWAS?
Well, in fact, that has been one of the criticisms leveled against the civil society organization. They never tried the courts of Sierra Leone. They went straight to ECOWAS court. We are not questioning their action. They are at liberty to determine which court they wanted to take their matter to. But once we have been served, as a government, we will respond accordingly. But for now, I am just making this interview to clarify that as a government, we consider it a responsibility to provide for the Ebola survivors, and we shall continue to support them because President Koroma was very clear that the Ebola survivors, wherever they present their certificate, they must be given free health care.
You see, I asked my previous question because it seems to me more and more Sierra Leoneans, I mentioned the case of your former Vice President, Sam Sumana, and now this case. It seems to me more and more Sierra Leoneans are turning to the ECOWAS Court of Justice. Is it because they don't trust the judicial system in your country?
There is every reason for them to trust the judicial system in our country. But again, by virtue of Sierra Leone being a member of ECOWAS, and ECOWAS citizens in Sierra Leone, they have a right, whether they wanted to seek justice in the ECOWAS court. They are at liberty to establish that.
Abdoulaye Berete is the spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, December 18th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Some Burundians have been raising concerns about the decision of their government to ask them for contributions to fund the country's 2020 general elections. Moses Havyarimana has the story from Bujumbura.
After the suspension of the direct aid to the Burundi government by the European Union and the United States, which contributed to almost 50% of the country's budget, Burundi government since 2016 turned to alternative funding of the country's project that includes the 2020 general elections. Early this year, the Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza was the first to voluntarily contribute to the 2020 general elections. The move was followed by some of the government officials and the ruling party supporters. Last week, the Burundi Home Affairs Minister Pascal Barandagiye said that it is the right time for all Burundians to contribute to the elections. He says people should understand it clearly that the money is not a tax or being forced to pay, but rather based on those who can volunteer. He says that all the political parties had agreed that it was a good idea for Burundians to contribute on the 2020 elections. Though the Burundi Home Affairs Minister said that no one is forced to contribute, a leaflet will be given to those who have given in their contributions. Civil servants who are not willing to contribute to the elections will trot write an official letter to the Home Affairs Minister. One of the civil servants who preferred not to reveal his name said that it was against their will and that it is a forced contribution.
I'll be forced to contribute 30,000 per month. If you multiply by 12, it's 360,000 that I'll have to pay per year. It's a forced contribution.
Many Burundians have been reluctant to comment on the government's call to contribute to the 2020 elections. However, many say that they don't have money to meet their basic needs, let alone the 2020 contributions. The contribution depends on the salary or income of a person. Every family or household is expected to pay 2,000 Burundian francs, that is equivalent to $1.3. Burundi opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, said that the move is nothing but a sign of dictatorship.
You know, I have always been saying that this is something which is not fair, because we pay taxes and the elections are supposed to be financed from the treasury. So how come that we pay taxes and we are asked to pay extra money for such an event?
As Burundi is currently struggling economically to implement development projects, the World Bank report indicated that the poverty rate in the country is at 70% and more than 80% of the youth remain unemployed. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The UN Secretary General's Special Advisor for the Prevention of Genocide, Adama Diagne, says South Sudanese leaders must pressure the African Union to establish a hybrid court to deliver justice for victims of the violence that has raged for 4 years now in the country.
The high-level revitalization of the Peace Agreement Forum should include calling on the African Union and South Sudan to expedite the establishment of the hybrid court. And in addition, it is noteworthy that the hybrid court, even when established, may only try a handful of core perpetrators. I mean, there is need to strengthen South Sudan's justice system in order to try several middle-level and low-level perpetrators, as well as start a credible transitional justice mechanism.
Mr. Adama Diagne, the African Union Commission of Inquiry on the conflict in South Sudan released its report, and one of the strong recommendations was the formation of the hybrid court. It's 4 years now. We have not seen the hybrid court. Can you bring us up to speed on the progress made so far by the African Union in the establishment of the hybrid court?
Well, I should say that the African Union has done a lot. But unless the government of South Sudan accepts to cooperate for the implementation of this court, it will be difficult. I mean, of course, something which the African Union should consider would be to at least start documenting the crimes which have been committed, collecting the evidence, preserving those evidence. The African Union could appoint, for instance, a prosecutor, a head of investigation, who could travel through the many refugee camps, try to interview the victims, collect the evidence. I mean, an excellent work was done by former President Obasanjo as a head of the Commission of Inquiry. They have documented numerous atrocity crimes which were committed, including many cases of rape. When I was in Yei, I was moved to hear testimony about an old woman of 84 years old who was raped. I mean, this cannot be tolerated.
I agree with you that UNMISS needs to be given credit for what they have done in protecting civilians within the POCs. But there are South Sudanese out there who still think there are some institutional failures of the United Nations in South Sudan. So it begs a question, can the UN be held responsible for its failures?
Look, the United Nations has its own internal mechanism to evaluate its work, including oversight role of the intergovernmental bodies like the Security Council, Human Rights Council, the General Assembly, among others. I mean, for example, the Secretary General is required to make periodical reports to the Security Council on implementation of its various resolutions, including on the mandate of the UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan.
That's Adama Diagne, the UN Secretary General Special Advisor for the Prevention of Genocide. He was speaking with John Tanza of VOA's Sudan in Focus program. A Hollywood actor originally from West Africa recently announced that he is an undocumented immigrant and a recipient of DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. An actor under the Obama administration allows undocumented immigrants who enter the United States as children to live and work legally in what is meant to be a temporary solution. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the story of actor Bamba Jan Bamba and why he is revealing his immigration status now.
Black Panther is not just the latest upcoming comic book superhero film. It is the fulfillment of a dream for Bamba Jan Bamba.
That's me right there. Boom. I'm the military leader. I wanted to be a part of this movie for years.
As if trying to make it in Hollywood isn't tough enough, Bamba has been living in fear over a secret he has kept until now.
I'm a black immigrant. I'm black and I'm undocumented. There were really a lot of opportunities missed because sometimes I get scripts and offers from outside the country and I can't go. Sometimes there are movies that shoot in Canada and I can't even audition.
The Ivory Coast native is a recipient of Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. This status means he can legally work in the United States because he and his parents came to the U.S. when he was 10 years old during turbulent times back in Ivory Coast.
The country was divided for a long time. There was a civil war. Thousands of people died.
I have all these sisters from Congo.
Even though he can legally work in the U.S., he's found much of Hollywood to be unfamiliar with DACA.
And they're like, what is DACA? Then I tell them what DACA is. They're like, okay, you know what? Just, do you have a green card? Where's your passport? I'm like, I don't have any of that. All I have is what the government requires for me to work legally. And this is it, and this is it.
The decision to make his immigration status public comes with professional risks. But Bamba says not speaking out maybe worse.
I decided, honestly, to share my story now when the administration decided that they wanted to end DACA. So, again, I just knew that there were no other options for me. So either go out fighting or go out in fear.
In September, President Trump said he would end the program and called on Congress to provide a solution. This after a promise he made in February.
We are going to deal with DACA with heart.
Mr. President, you made a promise to the Dreamers. You told us that you would find a solution for us. So we just want to hold you accountable to do that.
A petition asked for Hollywood to support undocumented immigrants such as Bamba.
I think Hollywood could do so much more just because of the power we have in the media to shift the conversation.
One, you've seen it.
Bamba says he did not make his status public because of the Black Panther movie, but it's an added bonus if the film helps amplify his story. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Our time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the finals of the CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup, which came to a close on Sunday as Kenya emerged champions after beating Zanzibar 3-2 on post-penalties. The two sides had tied 2-2 at extra time, forcing the winner to be decided through sports kicks. Kenyan goalkeeper Patrick Matasi was the hero of the game after he blocked three penalties to hand the Harambee Stars their 13th title in the regional tournament at the Kenyatta Stadium, Machakos, on Sunday. Nick Mwendwa is the president of the Federation of Kenyan Football.
This team will get 11.5 million shillings tomorrow. I have not even calculated how much it is. This has never been done in Kenyan football. So they are enthusiastic. They have been taken care of and they've done their job.
Uganda came from a goal down to grab third place after downing Burundi 2-1 in the CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup playoff. The final three-man shortlist for the AITO CAF 2017 African Footballer of the Year Award will be unveiled later today in Ghana. 11 players were shortlisted for the flagship award for African football last month, and the number will be pruned down to three. Staying with football news, Egypt's Soccer Federation said on Sunday that the country's national team will meet Portugal and Bulgaria in friendly games as part of preparations for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. The federation said in a statement that Egypt will play Portugal on March 23rd and Bulgaria 4 days later, with both matches to take place in Zurich, Switzerland. Gabon international Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is one goal closer to reaching triple figures for Borussia Dortmund in the German Bundesliga. The 28-year-old found the back of the net in a 2-1 win over Hoffenheim on Saturday evening. Aubameyang, who has scored 21 goals in 23 appearances across all competitions this season, has continued to attract strong interest from clubs across Europe, with both Everton and Liverpool linked with his services. From Germany to England, where Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp insisted that Egypt international Mohamed Salah is in a fine physical shape and doesn't need to be rested. Salah had been crowned November's Premier League Player of the Month after scoring 7 goals in 4 matches to continue his spectacular form this season for the Reds. In women's football, the Flamingos of Nigeria, Botswana of South Africa, and the Black Maidens of Ghana urged their opponents to reach the final round of the qualifying series for the 2018 FIFA Under-17 Women's World Cup this past weekend. Nigeria Under-17 women team progressed to the final round on away goal rule after they were held to a 0-0 draw by Ethiopia at the Samuel Obumedia Stadium. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, December 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton, Washington, hoping you have a productive week.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. every day, right here on VOA Africa.